If you, again, if you're joining us, we've been in this series, I Don't Wanna, and through this series, we've been talking about that in life, we will experience challenges and struggles at various ages and stages. We'll be in relationships in life, and there's going to be times when we get into these things, and there are even seasons and things that we've striven for, but then we get there, and we find that it's a little more challenging, maybe even more difficult than we anticipated. And the driving words that launch this series are from a text in the New Testament, simply a book simply entitled Hebrews. And we're encouraged by the writer, let us throw off everything that hinders and the sin that so easily entangles. And let us run with perseverance the race that's been marked out for us. And from time to time in life, it's kind of like if you've heard of a Spartan race or a Tough Mudder or the obstacle runs that involve a lot of mud and pain of getting through things. And sometimes life from birth to end can feel like it is one of those, that there's these stretches of our race that may be wrinkle-free and just filled with joy, but inevitably we will come to a point where we face challenges or we face obstacles between what we want or desire and what we currently have. And this applies to every area of life and relationships, that there is, when we boil it down, an ongoing striving in relationships, striving towards certain things. And if you pause for a moment and really consider what is it at its core, this irreducible minimum, what is it that I am striving for in every circumstance, in every relationship, in every material possession I seek to acquire? And what you discover is that as different as we all may seem, we're really not that different. Because it may be a lot of different ways and different that each of us pursue these things and go after all these different relationships and things in our life and stages, but the desired end that we're all striving for is this deep abiding sense of peace and contentment. As the writer of Hebrews states, it is possible to achieve that in this life and the next. However, to achieve that, there are going to be things that we need to realize. There are things that we tend to carry that we should drop. There are things that we take up in our life, material things, patterns of behavior that we should throw off, directions that we choose either out of ignorance or choosing to ignore what is good or right or true or best, and instead we choose a path that makes our life unnecessarily difficult or complicated and even painful. And if we're willing to engage God, as the writer says, about fixing our eyes on Jesus, that he becomes the pioneer, the perfecter, to go after him, to go up to follow his path, that if we're willing, if you and I would engage, and the way we do that is by engaging in practical teaching and authentic relationships with other Jesus followers, private disciplines, things like digging into as far as prayer, Bible study, studying the scriptures, making the pursuit of Jesus our priority. If we do that, God will help us identify the things in our life that we just need to throw off and cut loose, and he will help guide us along a path that won't necessarily be challenge-free, because that's life. But he will help us avoid the unnecessary entanglements and pitfalls of sin. And so last week we talked about marriage, and anybody that's been married for longer than 7 years knows that when you get married, you thought you were marrying an individual, and what you discovered is you married a family. Because basically both of you bring in this whole truckload of stuff that came from your family of origin. Some of it may be really, really good, and some of it really not so good, and involving enormous amounts of therapy. And so, you know, you bring this into a marriage, you know, and you're different in more ways than you know, and it isn't until you're really in it day in and day out that you discover a lot of those differences, different personalities. You each have your different perks and quirks and preferences and idiosyncrasies, and at times it can become very, very hard. And we learn a key passage, and in this passage includes 17 key words that will alter and set the course of any marriage. And in fact, consistently applied by two people could eventually lead you potentially to the marriage of your dreams. We learn these words: do not repay evil with evil or insult with insult, but on the contrary, repay with blessing. And it's like that doesn't make any logical sense at all. But he says, because to this you were called, so that you may inherit a blessing. Because if you apply these words over a period of time, you begin to inherit a blessing. Because these words will alter any relationship in life. So if you missed last week or any week in this series, single or not, please go to newlifewichita.com. You can go to iTunes, New Life Wichita, or Podbean. But because today we're moving on. We've only got two more segments in this series. And today is I Don't Want to Parent Anymore. Now for some of you, you're like some of my very good friends that have chosen to not have children. I have several couples that have chosen this, and I deeply respect and admire that, because that's not an easy decision. In fact, I admire my friends that have made this decision because they have dealt with social pressure from parents and family and friends and the culture at large. And sadly, sometimes people in church just kind of look at them as weird, like, okay, why wouldn't you have kids? And it's like, well, you look at your own kids like, oh, that's why you wouldn't have kids. So, but you know, they, for their own well-thought-out reasons, have made the decision to not have children. And contrary to all of these messages out there and even, you know, some well-meaning books about, you know, you should have a full quiver and all of that, you know, such a decision is courageous. So if you're somebody who would fall into that category, I hope you feel affirmed today. And for some of you, this topic may be painful. Because, again, we've got a diverse mix of individuals that make up this community and those that are coming to this community and joining. But we have people that they would do anything to be a parent. Or they have experienced a deep pain of losing a child or a grandchild through miscarriage or stillbirth or losing a child sometime after they're born, as my family and close friends have. And so my hope and prayers, if you would fall in that category, is that God would give you a deep, abiding sense of healing and peace, even in the midst of the kind of pain that only somebody that's experienced this kind of pain can fully understand. And you're not alone. And if you're here, you're listening online, and children are in your future, today is about gaining some insight and perspective as you prepare for the day, the possibility of becoming a parent, because parenting will have days and will have seasons where they are going to stretch and test you like nothing you have ever experienced before. And for those of you that are parents or your kids are still young, a couple of you there in the oven, my hope is that you're going to walk out of here with some greater clarity, that you're going to be able to get this right as early as possible. And for those of you that your kids are grown and or grandchildren are next, or you've got them, much of what we're going to talk about applies to you today as well. So don't start doing Cyber Monday shopping on your phone. Don't check out. This is going to be for you as well. So today is going to be less of a sermon and more of a conversation, granted a one-way conversation because I'm the only one talking. But here's the thing, for those of you that are parents, and again, I hope this is encouraging for you. There is no such thing as a perfect parent. Okay, there clearly is good parenting and bad parenting and somewhere in the middle, but there is no such thing as a perfect parent. It doesn't matter how many books or blogs you read, if you've taken all the parenting classes, you got a degree and it's got a shiny little, you know, gold stamp on it, all that, the perfect parent is a myth. In fact, one of my greatest embarrassments in life was that when I was in my 20s and my kids were small, I did a parenting workshop at my first church. You might go, well, why would you be embarrassed? Because, in fact, if you had been around our children when our kids were young, you would have wanted to go to my parenting workshop because we appeared to be geniuses. All right, we just like, you know, it appeared we were like the Yoda and the Obi-Wan of parenting. Shauna, she's 5'2", so she's Yoda. Our four children, they were super polite. They were well-mannered, they were well-behaved, they were smart and cute and cuddly and all these. And people would actually come to us and ask if they could babysit our children. People would randomly come up, strangers in restaurants, just to stop by and compliment us on well-behaved our children were. And they were growing up in the church community. They were loved by the children's ministry volunteers and all four of them. And they all four decided they want to be baptized at a very young age. And if I'm being authentic, and I'm embarrassed to admit it, Mama and I carried a little bit of pride, okay? Because our kids, compared to all those other little monsters we were seeing in the stores and the restaurants and all that, like, we were doing something right. So I was excited to teach some mad parenting skills. But then came high school. And especially our oldest began to make some life choices that were quite different than the way that we had raised them. We faced situations that were not part of our well-planned parenting agenda, okay? We found ourselves in navigating some uncharted waters, and each of our four children had their own unique personality, which is a side note I am still fascinated by, that the same two set of biological parents, and if you have multiple children, you know what I'm talking about, and that they can be so different from one another. But nevertheless, we began to face challenges. And see, a big assumption that we went into parenting with, that we didn't really realize, it bubbled to the surface. And the assumption was this: if I do X and Y as a parent, then I can expect Z. And we have a verse. There's a proverb: train up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he does not depart from it. So here, we're doing this, so we can expect this. However, We did, as a little side note, fail to consider the fact that while there is absolute truth to this proverb, I'm not arguing this proverb, but it was written by a guy named Solomon, a man who became king, a man who had been trained up in the way that he should go. But you know what? If you know anything about his dad was far, far from perfect. And as Solomon grew older, even though he was trained up, he did depart from it. In the generation of his family that followed, his sons in the family that followed, they departed from it. And in fact, the entire kingdom collapsed. But see, Sean and I hadn't considered that. And to our surprise, when we applied X plus Z or X plus Y in our parenting, the results were not necessarily a neat and tidy Z. The results were Q and K and L and O because there was something that our children possessed that we had completely forgotten about. Or we ignored. It was this magical thing called free will. Now, I know none of you in this room know what that is because you always did exactly what your parents wanted you to do. But for some reason, we were shocked. We assumed that the mistakes and poor choices that we made early on in our life, well, that was our parents' fault. That was their shortcomings. You know, not because we had a sinful nature or because we had free will and the free will to exercise it. And granted, our parents do play a role, just like I play a role. My wife has played a role. We play a role with our kids. But, you know, a lot of us as young couples will go into parenting thinking, you know, as parents, unlike our parents, we've got it all figured out. I mean, we've got better understanding and more technology. We're just so much smarter. You know, we've got these great books and there's co-sleeping and all this. And our parents didn't have anything. They like beat their kids. But, you know, we just see ourselves as better. But as our children get older, as our children got older, we discovered that being a perfect parent is a myth. And we, just like all other parents, we are all just doing our very best to not screw our kids up, keep them alive, and keep their need for therapy as adults at a minimum, right? So how do we run the parenting race well? How do we run it with perseverance and run it well? And see, I could spend hours and days answering that question. I mean, there are entire workshops and classes and just volumes of some really excellent books on this subject matters and some really, really bad books that you should never read. But there's all of this. So after just working through what could I possibly offer of value after imperfectly raising 4 sons into adulthood, what could I share with you in just kind of the brief minutes that we have together? So in the time that remains, this is really more less of a sermon and more of just kind of a limited conversation from a flawed Jesus-following husband and dad of 4. 28 years of being a husband, 26 years of raising children into adulthood. And just for the time that remains, I just kind of handpicked a handful of things to kind of send you out of here with this morning. Because these are some of the things that I learned, some of the lessons that I learned early on, and then some of the lessons that I unfortunately didn't learn until after being stretched and challenged and pressed as a parent. So the first thing that I learned is make your personal relationship with God number one priority. Why? Well, because this informs everything else in your life. So for some of you, this may be a problem because you're still unsure, uncertain about God or Jesus or church, and you're just trying to figure it all out. And the awesome thing is this community was birthed out of a desire of knowing that about half of this city would identify as none, no religious affiliation, and we wanted to create a place where you could come and wrestle with these big questions. And so I'm so glad that you would be here and do just that. But see, the thing is, even if you haven't yet crossed the line of faith, you can play too. Because one thing is true, and I love how a pastor put it a long time ago, and I dare you to put this to the test, and that is that following Jesus will make your life better and make you better at life. And that's what we all want. And this will make you better in every other area, including parenting. Because like a leader I met just a few days ago, he and I were talking, and he made the comment that becoming a parent is the great equalizer. Becoming a parent is a great equalizer. Because before kids, we can all feel this keen sense of individual identity and, you know, power, and we're choosing our own path and making our own decisions. And, you know, somehow we feel self-sufficient. We got things under control. But then we become a parent, and that all goes out the window. I tell you what, you get 1 hour of sleep a night, it will change your perspective on life. You're like, I don't know what I'm doing. I have created a human. What is happening? And, you know, you get a baby that cries on and on and on and on. And, you know, there's diapers and feeding and the fears and the insecurities. Oh my gosh, I am responsible for a human being. And this brings us to this common place, especially when we're tired, where we experience the challenge to actually then be who it is and what we need to be for those that are closest to us. And the challenge, his challenge is, it can be for all of us, especially when, for those of us, we have kids and when they're small, we've got to make this uninterrupted time for things like private disciplines, like prayer. I'm telling you, if anything will drop you to your knees, have a child, you will begin praying. Regular time in Scripture. There's so many resources. Maybe it's a book, or it's a Bible app, or an app that takes you through a led study, you know, to help walk you through it. Regularly listening to practical teaching online or on podcasts. There's just this wealth of things, you know, a podcast that you can download that when you're driving or when you're mowing or you've got that time, or maybe you have to get up a little bit earlier, or they're sleeping in your arms and you can throw a headphone in. And, you know, to be generously giving, to make time for authentic community with others so that you can walk alongside them and so that they can walk alongside you. It was life-saving, the people that we had walking alongside us when our kids were small, and we could give each other a break from one another. And then when they were getting older, in fact, as I'm getting a little off here, I had a group of guys that I actually had lunch with. They were all old enough to be my dad. I had lunch with them every Wednesday at a Thai restaurant every single week. And we just got really, really close with each other. We did this for a few years. And I remember I would bring to them, as I got to really know them and trust them, I'd bring them some things I was dealing with as a dad and wrestling with to get their advice. I'll never forget one time I just really unloaded. I was dealing with this one big problem with my son. And then I looked at them, okay, guys, I need answers. And the one guy just put his hand on me and he said, "Chad, whatever decision you make will be the right decision." I'm like, that's not helpful at all. You're supposed to be like wise. But I'm telling you, not doing this walk alone and pursuing God and having those that will walk alongside you, because I'm telling you, the mental, the physical, the relational, the spiritual health of your kids depends on it. You put in that as a priority. It's like if you've ever flown on an airplane and, you know, the stewardess, you know, I've flown enough now, I just kind of got my headphones in. I'm like, I'm trying to take a nap. And, you know, but they'll stand up there and they're going through the walkthrough of everything about how to buckle your seatbelt. You know, it clicks, it's buckled. And then, you know, if there's an air crisis and if the oxygen mask dropped down. Now, for those of you who have flown, when she describes if the oxygen mask come down and you have a child with you, who gets the mask first, you or the child? Right. Why? Right. Because here's the deal. If it's like a dire enough situation and you pass out, you're not helpful to anybody, let alone that child. And so the key is that you need to take care of yourself first. And the principle is the same when it comes to God, that we need to put our pursuit of Him first, so that He can fill us with whatever it is that we need to make us alert and able and equipped to be of help to those around us as a person, as a parent. In fact, when Jesus asked, you know, Jesus, there's like 640 some laws and there's 10 commandments, you know, would you just boil it all down for us? Like, what's the greatest? What's the most important? Because we want to win at life. We want to like live and die right with God. So what's the greatest commandment? And Jesus said, love the Lord your God with all of your heart, with all of your soul, with all of your strength, and with all of your mind. So of all the things you could do, this is the number one thing. And then tied to that equally is love your neighbor as yourself. But this informs the second. So as a parent, I learned, make your pursuit of God in your daily calendar, in your daily schedule, a priority. And trust me, I know how hard it can be when you have small humans, especially for your moms in your home, and you're just like, you're trying to navigate everything. I get it, but it is possible. My wife made it happen. I just admire her so much. It's absolutely crucial because, as I said, that core relationship informs every other decision and relationship in your life, where you're stretched and challenged, and at times you can be exhausted as a parent. But that relationship is what will give you the clarity that you need when things are cloudy. Clarity in the chaos and a point of reference in every storm. The second thing that I learned was that the key way that my personal relationship with God was lived out is how I love others, and specifically my wife, which kind of informs this next thing that I learned and embraced a long time before. I had a mentor tell me before we had kids, your spouse comes first, your child comes second. And especially, I'm telling you, for a mom, that does not come intuitive. Like, no, this is my child, and I protect him. And I'll explain it in a second. But for some of you, I just want to acknowledge, for one reason or another, you find yourself being a single parent. And it's hard to wear both hats. And I get that. That's a lot to carry. And I'm going to ask this as gently as I can, but just as a question of reflection. I wonder if you would agree that had both in the relationship, made that a relationship with God priority, number one priority, and that relationship had effectively prioritized how you showed love, how you handled forgiveness, how you handled conflict, all these things, could you agree that things might have ended up differently? But either way, the vast number of single parents do not remain single parents. They don't stay that way. So whether it's a first marriage or a blended family, your spouse comes first, the child comes second. Now, why would I say that? Well, for starters, there are tons and tons of writings and research on this, that the greatest gift that you can give your child is a strong marriage. I mean, if you think about it practically, how does it benefit your kid if your marriage goes in the toilet? It doesn't. It just like creates a lasting challenge. And some of you, you're living it. You know exactly what I'm talking about. It's like how does it prepare a child for the future to see if they see growing up that, you know, dad gives mom the leftovers. You know, mom gives dad the leftovers. And I'm not talking about cooking. It's just like, you know, my leftover energy, my leftover whatever, my leftover affection. Or if mom and dad just kind of stay in a relationship and tolerate each other. In fact, it's such a big deal that for every young couple that I agree to do their wedding, part of the agreement that we have together is part of that is premarital counseling. And the whole first section of questions is about the family that they grew up in and especially about their parents' relationship. Why? Because their parents' relationship is the number one informer of their view of what a marriage and what a relationship should look like. And so we need to talk about that. And among the questions are these two. How would you describe the emotional environment of the home that you grew up in? What words would you use to describe your parents' marriage? And I'm telling you, some of the answers that I hear are heartbreaking. It's like, okay, we're going to have some conversations. Because they're kind of going in this because of what they observed. And it may have been that their mom and dad, that in the very beginning when it first started out, they were so in love and there was all this chemistry and energy. But what these adult children remember and what they write down are just things that the parents, like, it would break their heart to read it. It's not what they intended. And so this is just so crucial. Because this is, if by putting your spouse first, it is an investment that pays dividends then into the lives of your children. The other reason your spouse comes first is because the day is going to come, your kid's going to leave, hopefully. I mean, I know there's a whole millennial thing, and I'm going to stay till I'm 40, but it's, eventually they are going to leave. They want to leave. They want to get out on their own, and yeah, it's scary and all that, but they're going to leave. So, and the problem is you know what your kids will leave behind when they leave? Whatever you built. Because if you made them the priority and they get all that emotional energy and all that affection and attention and scheduled priority and all that things, that means the other person in the relationship has come second this whole time. And now it's just the two of you again. And so will you sit across from a table and look at each other as strangers or adversaries? Or because you made a priority, experience a depth of connection and love that you really couldn't have foreseen with one another? Because when they leave, it's just the two of you again. And here's the other thing. When kids leave, it does not reduce their need for parents or their longing for parents. And again, I know for some of you, this is hard because this possibility for one reason or another has been removed. But for a lot of you, it hasn't. But there's that need. In fact, I remember early in years ago, I had a college student that I worked with. And like he went away for his first year of college, and after he got settled, his parents shared with him that they were going to get divorced. And they had stayed together for him until he was out in college. And honestly, he was like, you know what? And he found out they had actually fallen out of love like 8 years ago and just kind of given up on the marriage. He's like, I would have rather you'd done it then. Because now I'm in college, and the one thing I want to come home to is like the family. And so one of the things that you need to understand is that need doesn't change. In fact, last night I was having a really involved, meaningful conversation with one of my sons just about relationship, but he's wanting to call. Because one of the greatest gifts that one of my sons gave me a few years ago, he said, Dad, when I'm married, I want to have a marriage like you and Mom. And giving them that kind of stability. We're not perfect. Like, we're a mess. Talked about that on Marriage Week. But just a few practical ways to do this for you to be or in the future parents of little ones. For those of you, you've got adult kids and just kind of coaching them as they navigate. Just practical things. First thing, early bedtime for the kids from an early age. Because what happens if your kids stay up till 9, 9:30, 10? By that point, like, you're both exhausted. You've got no time together. You know, there's no energy for each other. And I'm just telling you, your relationship will likely struggle. In fact, even in the middle school, our boys had early bedtimes. They had to be in their rooms with the door shut by 8:30. They could read. The joke was they could quietly play a game, but that usually lasted for about 5 minutes because they were very competitive and it got not quiet. And then I have to go in there and like hit them with the game and put the, no, I didn't do that. But you know, 8:30, because here's the deal. Like we needed that time, like just for us to let down and talk about the day, what was going on. And it was funny. There would be times they would give us a little grief and I'd go, hey, listen, before any of you people was us. And you people are going to leave someday. And so, and it's just going to be us again. So either go to bed or your mom and I are going to start making out on the couch. And so suddenly they go to bed. Or there'd be evenings where we wanted a little more extra time. And I remember our boys would say, we're so mad when they found this out. Now they think it's a genius because they're going to be parents someday. But they could tell time, but didn't really have a sense of time. And Sean and I would decide, you know, we want a little extra time tonight. So they'd be distracted doing whatever. They were boys, so they were distracted. So I would go set all the clocks ahead an hour. Then kind of sit down and say, boys, it's almost time for bed. What? Oh, okay. Why is the sun still? Oh, time change. It's just like, you know. So parenting tip, that's a good one. One of the other ones is limit your kids to one major activity or sport a year. It doesn't have to be a calendar year because some sports and things kind of cross over. But this is just an encouragement, especially if you have multiple children. Otherwise, what ends up happening is like you will not have time and energy for one another because you will be running around all the time, all year long, for all these different sports, events, and practices, and things, and whatever. And just help them. And besides, we all know one of the best things that we could do in our society is just focus. And this helps them focus, maybe get really good at one thing. And tied to that, regular dates or special evenings are a must. And, you know, and again, when you're young and a young family, it may not be in the budget to go out and eat and whatever. That's totally okay. You know, again, get them in bed early, set the clocks ahead early, whatever you got to do, you know, and it's just time for you. It doesn't have to be fancy or expensive or whatever. But then, you know, if you're plugged into community, the authentic community, then you've got people that are close to you and they get to know your kids and they get to love one another. And then you've got people like, I'll take your kids one night, you take our kids one night. And I'm just telling you, you got to make this a big deal. And then just kind of one last thing on this particular one. If your kids force you to choose between one another, they lose every time. Great example is early on, and I'm from a blended family. My dad remarried early on in the marriage. There was something that I went and asked my stepmom for, and she said no. So I went to my dad, and he said yes. And so everything was, I got what I wanted. And then that evening came. And there were a lot of words said that I won't repeat here because he was pretty upset, but I do remember this one thing. He said, Chad, if you force me to choose between her and you, you lose. And the amazing thing was like, oh, that sounds kind of, I don't know. I'm telling you, what that did for me is it gave me boundaries, it gave me parameters, it gave me an understanding, and it gave me an appreciation for the relationship. To mess with one is to mess with both. And you don't want to get in between them because it's going to be like two boulders and you lose. So, all right, third thing I learned. And I'm forever grateful to a mentor who taught this before I had children. If it's not cute at 18, it's not cute at 2. In other words, if defiance, disrespect, disobedience, lying, biting, tantrums aren't cute for an 18-year-old, you wouldn't let an 18-year-old off the hook for it, then don't tolerate in a 2-year-old. Because it is 1,000 times easier to deal with something when it's small. And we all know this is true. Like in the medical world, that's why we get physicals, ladies have the joys of mammograms and all these things, because the earlier we can catch things, the greater likelihood of preventing something bigger or potentially life-threatening. And many of us have heard a proverb, but we've heard it wrong, and it triggers a whole group of people. And many of you have heard a proverb like this, spare the rod, spoil the child. And again, that's a whole triggering thing, but first off, that's not what he says. The proverb says this, the one who will not use the rod hates his son, but the one who loves him disciplines him diligently. Now, especially in the past few decades, the whole idea of like a swat or spanking your child or whatever, it launches some really intense debate, and that is not what I'm doing this morning. I'm not going there, but I will boil it down to here's the point. That in this proverb, the rod is symbolic of providing correction. providing course correction. Now, don't get me wrong. In this culture, the rod was literal. Okay, it was about inflicting a controlled level of pain. That was literal. But the core point is about course correcting. For example, if a small child is running towards the street, I will do everything I can to get after them and get to them and course correct them, right? Because I don't want them to run in the street. I don't want them hurt. You would do the very same thing. But here's the deal. If we really love someone, if we really love our child, we're not just going to sit around and wait for that time that they're running towards the street and hope that we get there in time to stop them. If we really love them, we're going to teach them not to run into the street. All right? And one of the ways that we do that is through controlled discomfort. Right? In order to save them from out of control discomfort that could bring them serious harm or death. And if we don't provide direction, if we don't provide course correction for a child, we set them up for failure and pain, even greater pain, and not just life or death, but in relationships. Because if they don't know how to deny self, if they don't know how to get their desires under control, they can take those desires and say, nobody's telling me what to do. I can do what I want whenever I want it. And you and I know you can make that pattern into some really, really destructive, life-altering decisions. So to allow or ignore behaviors like defiance or disrespect or disobedience or lying, you know, biting, tantrums, all these things, like everything that is the opposite of love the Lord your God with all of your heart, mind, soul, and strength, and your neighbor as yourself. It's choosing to allow them to move into a future with an inflated view of self that will set them up for incredible difficulty in life and relationships. And again, the earlier you deal with this, the earlier you save yourself and them from just a world of frustration and pain. And so, and let me describe it like this, again, just practical. About the time our boys started walking was about the time they also began to understand the meaning of certain words. And some of them were fun ones, like, you know, be gentle because they're touching something, you know, like a small puppy or a kitten or whatever, or, you know, or smell, you know, smell this or taste this, you know, and it's a spoonful of lemon juice. You know, throw it, you know, and you're teaching them to throw a ball. So there's like those fun things they begin to understand. And you begin to see it. They also begin to understand when there's something you don't want them to do. And you're telling them no or stop or whatever, but most normal children are going to test the waters in this, right? Like you said, no or stop, or when they kind of look at you and they're sizing you up, can they get to me? I don't know. And it's like they're going to reach over and touch it. But we understand that even though their vocabulary may be limited, their understanding is not as limited. So, for example, if I were to tell one of my small sons not to touch something, and then they went ahead and touched it, I didn't do the whole warning thing. There was no, like, counting to 3 or 10 or whatever. There's no counting. I get up, I get a hold of them, and I move them away from what it was and say, I said, no, don't touch. And then if they migrate back over there again, and I see they're headed back to whatever it was, maybe it was something just simple, like touching the TV. I'm like, I said, don't touch it. And they kind of look at me. You know, they do it. Then again, no counting to 3, whatever. I'm going to get up, I'm going to get a hold of them, and I'm going to inflict some controlled discomfort. And, you know, for us, you know, and again, you can judge me, that's fine. It might be a small swat on the hand, it might be a small swat on the backside, and now I'm moving them, they're going to cry, it's okay, the therapist can help them later. But here's the thing, it's like, what kind of, because I was giving them a gift. It's like, okay, what kind of barbarian calls inflicted pain a gift? You know, it's controlled pain, number one. But here's the deal. It's the same barbarian that would understand that the day is going to come in the future where they're about to touch something that can really hurt them. Or they're about to run towards something or walk out in a parking lot from between two cars. And in that particular moment, there's no time to say, I'm warning you. There's no time to say, I'm going to count to 3. It's no, I need immediate trust and obedience because it's going to save them from pain. And so they learned that if we said stop or no, we meant business. If I said, give mommy whatever it is that you've got, and then, you know, maybe it was just a toy, maybe it was a book or something, and they decided to run the other way, I'm going to get up and I'm going to retrieve them. And we're going to have an interaction because someday they may have a knife or they may have something dangerous and I need them to give it or do it. So again, you're teaching them respect. You're teaching them to obey because the day is going to come that they're going to get out into the real world and they're going to have a boss. They're going to have somebody that's over them. Or they're going to be in a relationship. And if there's nobody bigger than them and their desires, then they're not going to know how to submit. And for most of us in this room, we would say we want our child to grow up and put their faith, put their trust in, put their life in the hands of a benevolent God. But part of what that means is submission and obedience to be able to live that out. So the proverb proves true. If we love our children, as hard as it may feel for us in the moment, especially when they're little, if we love them, we're going to be willing to create a controlled level of discomfort, even pain, to protect them from something far worse. And it's not always, you know, sometimes it's a timeout or they lose something. But again, be consistent and direct. The fourth is this, and it connects to the first learning. You are the primary source for your child's spiritual understanding. You're the primary source for your child's spiritual understanding. And you can include, but don't abdicate. And this is a lesson I think I learned a little later than I would have liked. And what I mean is this: as my children grew, because they grew up in the church, you know, I've been in the ministry since the kids were born. They were always in some form of children's ministry and student ministry, and they worked with a lot of great volunteers that loved Jesus and loved the kids. And one of my greatest regrets is that I fear that I went beyond just including those people in the spiritual growth and development of my kids, and I somewhere along the way maybe began to cross the line into abdication. You know, if I could go back, I would have spent much, much more time, especially in middle school and high school, just talking personally and openly with my children about my walk with Jesus and sometimes my wrestling with God and the circumstances. And I fear that I allowed the balance to shift too much. And so my word to young parents would be that when your children are little, honestly, it's easy. It's easier to get them excited about a Bible story you're going to read together, songs that you're learning, or have them sing worship songs. But then once they enter into early adolescence, their minds begin to transition from the concrete to the abstract and the spatial. It isn't as easy. And the temptation can be to leave it to the pros. But adolescence provides an amazing opportunity to help them see how God connects to all of the insecurities and the questions and all these things that they're now dealing with for the first time. And it reaffirms the first learning of making your relationship with God with top priority, because you can't lead your children to a place that you yourself are not going. So, and just a quick word to grandparents, never, never underestimate the impact that you have on your grandkids. Without going into all the details, when I tell my personal story of coming to faith, my grandparents were heroes because they played an incredible role in shaping my character, my values, and ultimately me coming to a trust and a belief in God and Jesus Christ. So in my mind, they're heroes, and there's so many days that I wish that they were still here. So the last thing is, stay hopeful. As you're raising your kids, and for those of you who have raised them, stay hopeful, because again, free will. You know, if your kids are to grow up healthy in mind and body and spirit and relationships, I'm just telling you, God is the gap filler. Because there will be gaps in our parenting. There's going to be gaps. There's going to be ways that we fall short, which is why then making that first priority of God and prayer and pursuing Him to seek Him to fill the gaps. Because I don't know if you've ever thought of this, but do you know who was the first parent to have their children be defiant and rebel? God. Seriously. Adam, Eve, right. So imagine that therapy. Adam, I want to get to the root of some of your challenges, so tell me about your dad. Well, dad was God, and so, he put us in this garden. I had to name all these animals. I was really stressed out. But see, here's the thing. If you're raising children, or if you've raised children, stay humble, because there's no perfect parent, but stay hopeful, because there's no perfect parent. Just never stop praying for your kids, for your grandkids. So never stop putting your relationship with God as priority. Your spouse comes first, kids come second. It's not cute at 18. It's not cute at 2. You are the primary source of your child's spiritual understanding. And stay hopeful. Because there's going to be times you're going to look in the mirror and go, I am failing. I am failing. I'm failing as a parent. Why did God give me this child? Because they could have done so much better with, you know, my friends. You know, they're such better parents. Just don't go down that route. Let me pray. Father, I pray for all of us in this room that are parents or parents-to-be. And God, we need strength, we need wisdom, and we live in a culture now, especially with all of the electronics and the screens and everything. Our kids now and kids that are coming up behind, Father, they're just so bombarded. And I pray, Father, that you would make us what we need to be. I pray for every parent in this room or listening that you would give them wisdom and strength and hope. I pray, God, that you would lead them into life-giving and transforming relationships with other parents as well and other individuals, especially those that are maybe a generation ahead, so that they might grow and learn and be strengthened by wisdom and life experience. And Father, I pray for our children. I pray for this generation. I pray for the next generation coming up behind them. And I pray, God, that you truly would make us a community of individuals that prepare our kids for what they're going to face. I thank you for the volunteers here at New Life and those that are continuing to step into that ministry. I thank you that they're partnering with parents to help shape their children's values and their future so that there might be hope and good things and strength for the challenges that will come. So for any parent here that is tired or struggling, Father, or for those of us that have raised kids and we just see, it's hard to not just see the mistakes we made, I pray, God, that you would give us peace, help us to learn from the things that we could have done better and to be better for the next generation, and that you would fill in the gaps with our kids. In the name of Jesus, I pray. Amen.